Welcome to Human Potential at Work, the show where we explore social impact, inclusion, and empowerment of everyone, including persons with disabilities. Your host is Deborah Rue, CEO of Rue Global Impact, and co-founder and chairwoman of Billion Strong, an identity and empowerment organization designed to bring billions of voices of persons with disabilities together. To join the global community and to donate to the cause, visit billion-strong.org. That's billion-strong.org. And now, on to the episode.
Hello, everyone. My name is Deborah Rue, and this is Human Potential at Work. As a reminder, we've been doing this show for almost 8 years, which is amazing. And actually, my guest, Peter Torres-Fremlin, has been on the show before. So I am such a fan of his work. And if you don't know his work, and as you learn his work, I think you're going to become a fan too. He's just really brilliant. And we'll make sure that we include the episode that he was on before so you can actually see how his work has been transitioning. But I also want to say that Peter is my friend. I'm very blessed to be friends with him. But he also has been a really, really powerful global mentor to me. He was one of the first people almost that started mentoring me globally when I was telling him, you know, that I'm an American, so I know everything. Anyway, just kidding. A little bit. So, but he really has been a really, really powerful mentor to me in a lot of ways. And so he knows how I feel about him, and I'll try not to gush about him, but he just really is a very, very important voice in our industry. So let me do a quick visual description. I'm a mature woman with white and gray and purple hair, and today I decided to dress like a hippie. So I have red on, and I have a hippie skirt and really cool boots, because I'm just going to be a hippie today, because it just felt like a good day to do that, to really express myself this way. So welcome to the program. I'm also the executive chair of Billion Strong, the world's first global identity and pride movement. And Peter is also one of our global advisors. And the only way forward is together. And actually, what we're going to be talking about today is one way you can learn more about who we are as an industry because of the work that Peter does and the communities that he supports. So, all that said, Peter, who is the author of Disability Debrief and is also one of the founders of Disability Consultants, along with the amazing Nick Corby, who has also been on the show. But Peter, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Deborah. Just to do a description, I'm a white guy. I'm in my 30s. I've got some curly dark hair. I've got some wearing a headset that you kind of hidden under the hair. Got Mickey Mouse peeking from over my shoulder, and I've got a speckled gray jumper and glasses and a beard.
And I will just say that you have great curly hair. I just want to say you have really great curly hair. So as somebody with curly hair, I have to appreciate it. Yeah. So, and also thank you for the nod to Disney, as you know, as I told you, Americans were all that. So glad that our brand got through.
No,
so.
It does. And it gets everywhere in different ways. It's such a pleasure to be back, Deborah. I think we were last on the podcast together before the pandemic. I was in Egypt, where I was learning Arabic. I'm now back in Colchester. I've stopped learning Arabic. And since that time, I was able to start Disability Debrief, which is sort of now, it's that is a newsletter. It's now an online magazine giving a disability lens to world news and curated resources, Deborah, from now like over 125 countries. So it's a really unique source of news. I try and make it fun, and I sort of bring myself into it as well. So I'm sure we'll get into all of that. It's really good to be back.
Yes, and what's interesting is there's a lot of disability newsletters. It's a lot of them. But to me, the Disability Debrief, it's different. It really does feel like you said, it feels more like it's part of the world news, because we still, and I get it, we still have a tendency to want to talk about this from where we are living, our locations. And I understand that those are such important topics, but we have to really understand the global conversations. And something you actually taught me when you were consulting with the International Labor Organization was how important in the developing countries are in these conversations. Now, of course, I knew that, but you were able to ground it in a way that I had not seen with other consultants. And so I've always thought you looked at the what we need to do a little bit differently than a lot of people were looking at it. And I really, really appreciated that. You also, Peter, I don't know if you want to talk about it, that you have lived experiences yourself as a person with disabilities.
Yeah, no, and it's that, it's that combination, Deborah, that I think is important to bring out. Like, one of the reasons we do look at disability a bit locally, it's a very local issue, right? Whether it's our own lived experiences, I was sort of born with a physical disability, been growing up, been upgrading my disability in the meantime. So that's a bit of a journey. And it makes one really aware, like, is my bus stop accessible? Can I get the services I need? Will care assistance be needed? Will whatever is the way people look at me okay? It's a really local issue. But as you were kind of saying, Deborah, there's this really special thing about the connections between countries. I actually sort of found out and entered the disability movement, I would say, in my travel in Bangladesh. I loved travel and I met some disabled people there, and they brought me into this thing of connecting with disabled people. I think that it's really fascinating to hear what's going on in other places. I guess for a message that maybe if you're kind of coming from the American point of view, I think that that's got a specific set of approaches, very based on the ADA. Unlike other countries, it hasn't ratified the UN Convention. And it's quite relatively resource-rich compared to a lot of other countries.
Right.
So
right.
When you take the international view, you're going to see how are people taking this convention and working on it? And how are people acting in, like, less resource-rich settings? And how, just out of interest, like, when you kind of hear something like about the invasion of Ukraine or this recently, this horrible, horrible earthquake in Turkey and Syria, how are disabled people affected by those things? We don't really hear that so much from mainstream media, right? Like the news is being covered and the world is being covered, not in a way that has a disability lens. So I think it's really important to try and bring this disability view to the ways the world is changing socially, politically, economically, in new technology. I know that you really focus on that exploration, Deborah. So that's kind of, I offer that invitation to really stretch ourselves. It's news that really stretches me. I start, as you were saying, from having, I spent 10 plus years working outside of the UK. I was based in Bangladesh and Egypt and Brazil. I learned the languages of the places that I was in. I made that real effort. I saw how different it can get. So I'm very, humbled by seeing global news, but I try to bring out aspects of that sort of communicate the situation of people with disabilities, the joy and spirit of the movement, like the different fights that are going on, the different problems we have in different places that end up looking quite familiar, and it's so nice to be able to share that.
Right. I agree. I want to dig in a little bit more into the work, but I just want to ask you a question that you made me think of. I always try to mentor people, just like I'm so grateful for people like you that have mentored me, because we all, I believe, can be mentors to each other. And but it's fascinating. I'm always mentoring younger people with disabilities because I'm so passionate about this. And I see sometimes Americans, young Americans, come out and they're like, okay, now this is what the brands need to know. The brands need to know to include us, and that we matter, and that we add value, and that you're really not being inclusive if you're not making sure we're included. And I find that sometimes what people want to talk about we already have been talking about this stuff for a really long time. And so you can come into the conversation and talk about what we've all been talking about. But I'm trying to encourage sometimes the people that I mentor to really look at what is already being talked about, what's already being said, what do we already know? And you, there are multiple ways that you can understand this, including the disability debrief. And I don't want to discourage people from, you know, their voices being heard, I guess. And I just feel like times are so critical and intense that I'm trying to help stack the deck so that when we are talking about these things, we're talking about them in a more empowering way that isn't just saying the same thing over and over and over again. We need to be included. Okay, so we definitely need to be included. We need to make sure that Americans with disabilities are protected. I agree. We need to make sure that we ratify the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities so we can join the rest of the world, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of stuff we need to do, but there's also a lot of confusion. And sometimes our community, I love our community, love being part of it. We add to the confusion, you know? And so I think that's one reason why I so appreciate your work. And I was hoping that maybe we could start by talking a little bit about the disability consultants group.
Now, Deborah, can I just back up, because I really want to respond on Absolutely. On that point. I think that it's a question of what are the different ways can we approach social change, and how do we learn about how to do social change? I think you're being quite sort of polite and discreet, but maybe let's be a little bit more direct. And I don't want to generalize either, but I feel that some of the prominent modes of social change, like the loudest ones, not just in disability, are these days very combative, right? As our societies polarize, I think we get deeper into the idea that you have to shout to make a difference. And I really want to celebrate that as one form of activism. But I worry that other forms of approaching social change aren't necessarily as well known, and people coming into the disability movement fresh aren't necessarily going to get exposed to them, because they are by definition a bit quieter, Deborah, because they're people trying to work behind the scenes, trying to work to shift big organizations, not so emphasizing what is the reach of a voice or a position to make on social media or beyond, but trying to work with people as colleagues. That's an approach, as you know, it's an approach that I come from. And the way that I'm trying to explore this on the debrief is to talk with people about how social change is made. I find it really interesting. Disability is one of the subjects over the past 30, 50 years around the world is absolutely unrecognizable, just the streets, seeing how physical access has changed, for instance, seeing disabled people on TV, seeing ASL at the Super Bowl, right? All of this is totally unimaginable from 30 years ago. So I think it's really interesting. How did it happen? I come from policy work, Deborah, and I realized that, policy is really boring. It's interesting if you're in it, but it's boring. But what is the interesting thing? Policy is about how do you make change, right? Policy is about how do governments, how do big organizations, how do others change on these issues? And it's really complex, and it needs people doing all sorts of different types of things. So that is one of the, alongside the news that I provide on the debrief, I do a series of in-depth interviews with people, and I really try to make a space for hard questions, right? I'm trying to take the critical friend role, in the sense I'm writing in community, I'm writing for colleagues and friends like yourself. So I'm not gonna take a more explosive approach, even when I feel it, even when I have some quite sort of serious criticisms. about how people are doing things, I'm going to try and raise constructive questions and give people the tools that they know how to approach it. And I think that space, people have commented to me, it's quite rare. It's something I was really aware is kind of inequitable in the sense that if you know someone, they'll tell you about this. And Deborah, this is also why a podcast like yours is really important, because you get to explore this with people, because people in their public interventions are going to stick to the talking points, are going to stick to it should be X, Y, and Z, as like people on social media have to stick to the kind of often quite combative points that drive engagement and ways of summarizing very sort of complex things in simpler tones. That adds a lot, but that can't be the only thing. And I really try and go sort of behind the scenes on how people in the disability movement work. And like I say, it's a movement that has made extraordinary changes within a generation. And let's learn from them. I also hope that people in other movements get excited by that, because we're kind of kicking ass with very few resources, right? And so I think that there's really broader lessons that more people can take about how to do advocacy, how to work with organizations, how to shift conversations in business, in nonprofit, in social change. Yeah. So it's definitely, you got me on a really subject that I'm passionate about as well, Deborah. So sorry to interrupt your question.
No. I'm so glad, because we really want to hear from you. And one thing that I think that is so powerful about what you're doing is that we all need to educate ourselves and we need to understand what's happening. I know that you mentioned the Syrian and the Turkish earthquake. Well, I have a wonderful employee and his family living in Syria, and it's chilling what's happening. You know, I met a wonderful consultant actually on the disability consultants list from Russia. Oh, well, I can't talk to her. She's from Russia. No. People are people. And we are part of a beautiful community. And what we can't be doing in these conversations is carrying our flags. No. We're all welcome. So one thing that I loved about what you were doing to help broaden the conversation about what really needs to be talked about, because once again, you can't, I've said this on air many times. At first, I was invited to speak all over the world because I was a market influencer. I was getting out there, but also I believe because I was an American. And so I would come in and they're like, okay, so y'all been doing this for a real long time. So how do we do it? And I would just be very honest and say, well, we don't know. We have done a very poor job in the United States of really employing people with disabilities as meaningfully as I would like to see. And I love, as you said, we've made lots of progress. We're suing each other and blah, blah, blah. But it's also interesting, the beautiful American voices I hear, because sometimes the American voices, and maybe because I'm really noticing, or I think there is some truth to this as well, but they're speaking so loud and so passionately and purposefully, but often they're speaking at it from just their one lens, just from the lens. And I'm constantly saying to Americans, once you leave our border, you're no longer protected by the Americans with Disabilities Act. And we have to really care about our brothers and sisters outside of the United States border. Because as you said, we have a lot of assets, a lot of resources, even though we're not really using them all wisely. And that's okay. That's okay. You know, we're rethinking the whole world. But I know when I told you that I was creating Billion Strong, and this is one thing I love about him, and it aggravates me terribly, is that he said, really? Do we really need this, Deborah? And he really made me go into why. And that's what I love about him. He's going to always challenge me. He's not just going to take my word for it. He's going to challenge me in a kind way, not in a mean way, but in a kind way that helps me grow. And Peter was there was a few people that did that. Peter was one of them. And I appreciate that, because I haven't lived in Bangladesh with a disability, for example. I just haven't, you know? And so I wanted you to talk a little bit more about, as you learned more about Billion Strong and agreed with me that we all need to keep coming together in all these ways, tell us more about why you and Nick decided the Disability Consultants Group needed to come together, what that is, and also, if you don't mind, how did the Disability Debrief come out of that effort?
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you, Deborah. That's it's really great to be able to speak about that consultants group. In some ways, it's just an email list, quote unquote, but it's something I think like a bit over 5 years ago, originally Nick sent an email like connecting a few of us that had done consultancy on disability issues internationally. So people that were advising big, often quite big organizations, often say parts of the UN or big charities, like how they should work on disability. And we were kind of advising them, but we weren't very connected with each other. And this became a forum that we could connect with each other and then really connect with more people. I think it kind of speaks to a few different issues. Like it speaks to this aspect of when we're advising organizations, we're still very much figuring it out, right? We don't necessarily know the answer. Disability is going into a lot of new spaces that it wasn't in. We've got some theories, but the rubber hits the road and it gets complicated. Even like I was sort of giving like a little bit of advice to an organization on reasonable accommodation. And like it's an organization that works in many, many countries, works in humanitarian emergencies. What does reasonable accommodation look like for that organization? And it's kind of things like that led to really interesting discussions on the group. Partly because like, I mean, we know the theory, but we don't know like quite how to do it. We don't know the best advice to give people. It was really meaningful for me to be involved in that group. I was co-facilitator for many years with Nick and then Shireen Kiani and Eliana Rosas Aguilar. Then since it's recently this year that I realized, okay, it's time to move on. Let's get some fresh blood to help sort of shepherd this group. But it's a very active group that is kind of, we're always learning from each other. Another learning was like there were just way more of us working on this work around the world than we'd anticipated. Like we get sort of one of the reasons I stepped down. So like every like week or two, I'm getting an email from like someone that I'd never heard of that has been working on this for many years and can they join the group? And of course, I would encourage, like it's a freelancer-centered group. If you are freelancing on disability, then contact us. We did make it with like a kind of freelancer first because freelancers don't have that sort of the resources of professional connections that people working in the organizations would. And how did the debrief come out of it? I started sharing just news, just like, oh, I've seen these things on social media, here it is. And I'll be honest, like the news, the quantity of news I saw kind of stressed me out a bit. And so I was like, I'll write it up in a little list that'll calm me down. But then people in the group were like, oh, this is really useful. And I'm like, oh, it's not stressful. You sure it's not stressful? No, it's useful. Yeah, great. And then out of that came the debrief. And so it really started as a resource for colleagues. Like, I've seen these reports. Here's where they are. Like, this is what you might want to look at. There's a lot of news coming out on disability. There's a lot of quick development in all sorts of sectors. So just to help people keep up with it. Then I realized that people that weren't colleagues were reading it as well, which at first I was a bit insecure with, Deborah, because I had the idea that, like to speak to the general public, you need to speak differently. And I realized that that's one of the great pleasures of doing something on the internet is you learn to challenge those assumptions. I learned that not the whole world, but there are many people interested in disability, even though they don't work on it, would like to find out more, not interested in being patronized and not interested in simplifications. If Deborah, you or I heard about a different topic we didn't know about, we wouldn't want the like 101 awareness video. We'd want someone to like go in like with some pretty like to show us like what the complexities are. And so that's helped me now reach the place in the debrief is both for colleagues and for general audience. And I try to make it engaging. I try to sort of highlight, as well as the big reports that I'm highlighting, I will try to sort of highlight things like little videos that people can get into, or sort of human stories. I also use my own story partly way to just kind of do a reality check on the reports, because I believe in that importance, really, that a disability lens has to come through lived experience and lived experience of different people, not just one person. And those reports and that activism needs to be checked against our lives, right? And find ways of speaking to that.
Yes. And you know, Peter, one thing that I've done, I mean, obviously you're my friend and mentor, and but I
Deborah, can I just say on that point, it's sort of, it's absurdly kind of, I think it's a gross exaggeration. Like, you've always been so encouraging and supportive of my work, so I definitely didn't count it that way around. I'm really grateful for our exchange. Maybe with the word mentor, you're just embarrassing me. We learn from each other, but just to pick up on that as you were.
And I, of course, love to embarrass you because you are my friend. So you know, I'm definitely going to harass you. That's what I do with
my cheeks are turning the color of your hair, Deborah. It's sort of getting a bit pinker in here.
But you know, I have learned so much from you, and as we know, we are all stronger together, which is why I love the Disability Consulting Group, you know. And but I also want to talk a little bit about how I was experiencing the disability debrief and some of the other audience members. Because when I saw it, of course, I love your work, and I was looking at it, and it's like, oh, good, another newsletter. But I actually found it to be very powerful and content that I didn't really see anybody else really talking about. And often when I am coaching or mentoring peers, a lot of they're not all in the States, but I always am trying to encourage wherever you're looking from this, to also to look what's happening in the world, because we can learn from each other on how others are living their lives, accommodating, you know, sort of like Enable India has the Discovery Awards, which Billion Strong is involved in. And so is Zero Project, for example, and others. And it's really about celebrating the innovations that we see with assistive technology and things and accommodations and stuff. But so I was very intrigued by your newsletter and the depth of it. And so I started, you know, promoting it, as we should do with each other. I promote it and sent it out. And every time it comes out, I promote it because my audience really gets a lot from it. But I want to give you a compliment to embarrass you again, in that there are other people that have noticed the work that I've noticed. And these are Americans they have very, 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 very high standards. And some of these Americans, not the one I'm about to mention, but some of the Americans are real hard on each other or other people. But I saw leaders like Alice Wong in California, who is an amazing leader, get behind this, and others, and really advocates that I see fighting for our rights. And sometimes, once again, not Alice Wong, but others that have a tendency sometimes to be a little bit more mad on social media, you know, and them really embracing it. And I thought, wow, Peter has done something here that's different, because sometimes there are groups that no matter what you do or say, it's going to be wrong, and they're just mad. And I understand there's been a lot of discrimination, a lot of disenfranchise. I understand that, but I'm sort of with you in that I think the way forward is trying to break down some of these barriers and talk about these issues. So I wanted to give you that compliment, because it's not only me saying, wow, but I'm actually seeing the community and community leaders I really trust, some of them that are tough, saying, oh gosh, this is so valuable to us, and we've never seen anything like this. So I just wanted to I'm sorry to embarrass you.
Thank you for embarrassing me. I guess like that maybe we shouldn't necessarily say mad. We mean like as in angry, right? Like the confrontational
right.
style. But I think that's that will definitely be something interesting to look out for. I think that disability is very diverse. There are a lot of strongly held opinions. There are a lot of sort of differences of opinions. I think that, so people are seeing my work and I love it, but it's also, it's not massively prominent, and it will be like, as audience grows, I look forward and I'm trying to sort of how to prepare myself for the diversity of opinion. And I need to be able to take criticisms well. I think that I also hopefully can use the debrief, this is something that I want to grow, as a way to showcase that diversity of voice. I think that, I'll give you an example, Deborah. I haven't published anything yet that someone uses a word other than disability. Right? Okay. But yeah. But most disabled people probably do use different words. Right?
Yes.
I think that we've got very strong views about it in the side of the movement and the side of people doing politics, that we really want to insist on like certain ways of labeling things. But a lot of people in a lot of different places don't follow that. And so I haven't yet sort of gotten into that, but that's an example where I want to sort of give room for diversity of voices and to, like, I think there's pressure on a minority community to always have one answer and one narrative for things. And I want to explore a space where we can, like say, guys, it's complicated. It's complicated. And to show some of those complications and, like, not have to be, like, something, oh, like, I agree with 100% of everything this person has said here. Or I would use the same words. Like, the point is that I wouldn't use the same words. So that's why I've used that technique of interviews. Hopefully I will be able to get a wider range of contributors. I already have some contributors. Anya Colley-Costello does a really magnificent series on climate change and disability on The Debrief. It's a series that has been used by governments and NGOs around the world to like affect how they approach this issue. So it's already made a good influence. There's more coming soon, so definitely stay tuned for that. Tan Kwan Or from Malaysia is doing really interesting illustrations, and like you said about the global view, like, he illustrates things like in ways that I never would have thought about, like even the color choices he uses, I'm like, oh, I just wouldn't have thought about that. Or sort of say he celebrates the lunar new year, so he did an illustration of a rabbit, like, for instance. It really gives a different view, and we need to find those kind of creative ways of talking about things as well to do justice to the full experience of our disabilities. So like you definitely touched on an interesting point. I'd kind of look forward to see how that develops. For me, I hope that I can create a space where kind of that broader diversity of voices can be made without us needing to, like, and I do this as well, like, without police it, right? Like, the were like this side of the line on the terminology, yes, or like you did this approach and you shouldn't do that approach, yeah, and blah blah blah. Like, it's a very complex, diverse space of more than a billion people, so there's going to be different views about it.
I agree. And I want to ask you another question, but I'm just going to make a grounded comment about that first. We're working in the United Arab Emirates, and we were hearing them using terminologies that some people really do not like, this terminology.
So, you know, that's a good one. Let's tell readers about that. It's people of determination.
People of determination.
I think in Arabic, it's something like sahib El Hamem or something, I've forgotten, but it's people of determination. And that definitely gets a bit spicy when people from the US and UK are seeing, like, people of what now? It definitely gets spicy, and I definitely feel a bit spicy. I feel a little bit spicy about it. I'm determined, like, not like that, Deborah, right? Like, yeah.
Right. Well, and what's interesting about it is we were talking to them and we were talking about this language, because that's something we're talking about at Billion Strong, is what is the right term and should we attack each other, blah, blah, blah. So we were talking to them, and they said to me, the woman I was talking to, Renat, she said, in Arabic, it makes more sense to the people than in English, people of determination. And I said, well, but people of determination is just people with, like my daughter with Down syndrome, intellectual or, you know, developmental delays. And she said, no, it's for all people with disabilities in the UAE. And I said, but are all people in the UAE really accepting this term? So it was just a very interesting conversation I was having, because one thing, as we figure these things out, does a culture have the right to decide their own language and we all be okay with it? But what does that mean?
It's really interesting. I get the feeling that that was a kind of government, that was a kind of top-down term. I do know some Arabic. I'm not sure if it sounds better in Arabic. It can sound better as with disability if you haven't been introduced to the empowered way of terming disability. Like, I remember when I was in Egypt, someone looked at me and said to a friend, like, oh, is he a disabled or something? It was like quite aggressive, and my friend was like immediately, no, right? Like, it's like, well, no, but like also like a little bit, right? Like, it was an Arabic term that was like, rather than like disabled person or person with this disability, it was more like disabled. It's a bit intense. And so like coming from there, you'd think people of determination, that sounds better. Do some leaders in the disability community in the UAE do use and defend the term. So it's hard to know what to do with. I'm not as locked into this is slightly a sort of a way that my opinion differs a little bit from many of our colleagues and brothers and sisters in the movement. I am not as locked into like getting obsessed about terminology as some people are. There's the simple reason for that is I believe that you can say good morning and it means something really offensive, and you can use an offensive word and it's just like the way you kind of banter with your friends. And so like, I think it's kind of, it's very important what people do and how they're like, if people are talking about people of determination and kind of really locating it in the individual and really emphasizing, oh, you have to overcome, you have to do this and society isn't going to change. Like, I've got a problem with that. But if people are using it, people of determination, and they're saying, look, and society has to accommodate and we have to change our attitudes, that's what we're saying. Like, I'm not going to get fussed about like tomato, tomato on that. Right. This is slightly different from a lot of our colleagues who kind of see the words would have the political content much more closely linked, which is, I mean, there's obviously reasons and strong reasons that you would take that approach. It's not the one that I land on though.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, though, it's very important to have the discussions instead of deciding, oh, no, that's absolutely wrong. You know, we've got to have the discussions, which is why I really was appreciating listening to that one woman as we were talking about it. I know I've kept you longer than I was supposed to, but I have two more questions before I let you go. And one of these questions, I think you've already been answering along the way, but what are the gaps in the knowledge of disability inclusion? Because I see great, great gaps. And even things like recently, thank goodness, the UN has started using DEIA. We have to have A. It's for accessibility. Everybody needs access. But what are the gaps in the knowledge? And I know you're trying to address it. And I know you don't know all the gaps, but there are major gaps, Peter, which is why sometimes I'm nervous when a corporate brand hires one person with a disability that doesn't really have any real background except their own wonderful lived experience. And is that going to really give this brand what they need to truly include our complicated, nuanced community? So over to you.
No, but that is very much, I think we're all on a learning journey. I think when we work on disability, like, we are really aware, no matter how long we've worked on it, that we have sort of huge gaps in what we understand. I think it's quite sort of well known, the gaps on sort of data and the situation of people with disabilities. And I think, like you're saying, how organizations approach it, there's, I think, sort of consensus on like what are the sort of areas it needs to be approached in, but obviously how that is done can differ a lot by industry, and then industries have really specific technical things. And if you think like with a new technology, like sort of say virtual reality, like, okay, well, some of that we know, like sort of visual descriptions, we're familiar with those. We don't use them enough already, but then it's like visual descriptions in 3D content or how you interact with virtual reality with a different set of things. So that's a kind of, that's like a real design and technology thing. And I think each sector has sort of a lot to explore. I would say kind of a few things about this related to what I'm trying to do on the debrief. This kind of might surprise audiences because, say, in the US and in the UK, we don't have enough information on disability, but like we have even less from other countries, especially right. Kind of when you're looking at it through the English language, as I am. So that's what I'm really trying to do with the debrief, to show what's there and to help sort of find new content to speak to that. And I would say sort of on this, in terms of the gaps in the knowledge, I want to make an argument for disability media, right? That's a disability debrief is that, but it needs to be a lot wider than the debrief. I think that we've given too little emphasis to media, because media is a way of sort of spreading the evidence and the knowledge. Is it making that knowledge that's there and known get to a wider audience? It's a way of changing attitudes. It's a way of building our capacity. It's a way of showcasing the voice of disabled people. These are all absolutely key things that need to be worked on to change the situation of people with disabilities in our countries and across the world. And I think that the community has kind of underemphasized the need for disability media, for kind of independent disability media. Obviously, this is a very self-interested argument, but I also make it as a professional that I was working in international development on disability issues. We talked about influencing mainstream media. We didn't talk about the channels and the way to develop audience and community for the issues we've had. You're a kind of leader in this space, Deborah, with things like Access Chat. You were kind of innovating in like how to connect people interested in accessibility and other issues on Twitter. With this podcast, you have a whole directory of people right. like doing so much work on disability and insights into what they're doing. Like it has to be a lot bigger, and we have to work to get that to people that are interested in it. And I think that like the interventions made on disability are often made without that consciousness of like supporting broader means for connection about it. And it often comes down to, say, some of the people that you mentioned, like on social media, playing these roles of being these connecting points, of being the more visible, and then like sharing things that are there. You mentioned Alice Wong. She is sort of par excellence on really being able to like spread an authentic disability story, make space for other people to tell yes. to tell their story, and really shift conversations profoundly. You can't kind of consume her work and sort of leave unchanged from it. And right. Like it's also about like we're leaving it to individuals like that. Wait a minute, like it's kind of it's something I wish the sector invested in more. And that's where I'm trying to make the connection that, look, everyone agrees we have challenges on data. Everyone agrees we have challenges on evidence, on capacity, on raising a voice and changing attitudes. Or like one thing that like deals with a lot of those areas at once is media. And I wish that was backed up with more investment.
I agree. And that's something that Billion Strong really wants to help invest in as well. I know that just with my show, Human Potential at Work, we have like 400 episodes, and then Access Chat has another 400. Just think of just those two shows and the amount of content we have and historical data and watching us shift and change. And then there's so many others doing it. And I'm really, really trying to be good about making sure people know what's out there. But I know I've kept you longer than I said, but I want you to tell us how Disability Debrief is being funded. How do we find out about the work? How do we get the newsletter? How do we join the disability consultant groups if we are consultants in this field? And, you know, how do people find out more about the work that you're doing, Peter, and support it?
Thank you so much. Deborah, I'll take this in a slightly different order. If you're consulting on disability issues, particularly with work that's international, it's the, currently Nick Corby is the sole caretaker, so it'd be to contact him. We can, if you contact either me or Deborah, we can pass on your contact and tell you what the group is about as well. In terms of how the Disability Debrief keeps afloat, it's in a way that I would never have expected. Deborah, it started as a passion project that I was just doing on the side. And then, like, even actually before I asked anyone for money, someone came to offer me money because they're like, this is quite important. I am now an absolutely shameless hustler. So, like, in the next few minutes, you and the audience might get hustled. So watch your pockets. Watch your pockets and your credit cards in this. It is now funded by the community, the readers and organizations that use it. It has over 100 individuals. Like, it's 5 or 10 different organizations supporting it. My logic is if everyone gives a little bit, then mm-hmm. it will keep going. We have to pay for media. We're not, this is a much bigger issue than disability. Like, if we don't pay for media, then we're going to get sort of not great stuff that depends on different sources of funding. Paying can keep it independent. I really am so moved by that trust and the faith that the community has to, like, push this mission further. And it lets me do this work. I'd said to readers at the end of last year, I work for you all now. Please join us on the debrief. Everything is absolutely free for everyone, always. There's no paywalls. That's the other part of this funding model. You get nothing for funding it. You help this resource exist because it's pay as you can. Lots of people are not going to be able to support this. It has to be available for them as well. You can find that on disabilitydebrief.org. Please put in your email address and whatnot. If you're able to support this mission of sort of telling world news from a disability point of view, of like creating this really now quite unparalleled library of disability world news, and one that is very quickly growing. Please sort of financially contribute as well. I would say, like, one way that organizations are using it is, you mentioned a little bit that it's a way to reach people. So I think if you're work on diversity in an organization, this is a way that you can kind of keep up to date on the issues you need to know. It's also a way you can bring colleagues over on board as well. So some people then share it with like their disability employee groups or champions networks or whatnot through their organizations, because they know personal stories or things that are interesting and like get to the essence of why we do this work will help change attitudes and sort of shape how people work on this. So I'd really love for more people to see this. I'd really love for them to share their experiences and what work that they're doing, because it really comes out of that community. And I hope that I hope people join in this journey of like using disability as a way to see what's new and exciting and what's challenging and difficult in this world that is changing so quickly.
And I would also say that if you're a corporation that is in the media, This is a really good opportunity for you to really see what's being done here, what we need to be done to support the work. I would love to see some media groups, you know, sponsoring the work. I also would like to see corporations not only, and by the way, this is not what Peter said, but don't just send it to people that are talking about disability inclusion in your organization. Any of the intersections, anybody talking about including Black and Brown, LGBT, we all need to know this because of the intersections. And I would also say, do not assume that there's only a small segment of people that care about disability, because the reality is, you know, to be human is to be, you know, have disabilities. It's not that we're broken or anything. And so be careful of only staying in your lane when you're sharing this data, because this data is very different. It's very powerful, and that will help with all of the intersections, but it will also help you if you are a corporate brand that's actually trying to convince us, the human beings, the people of the world, that you are, you know, a corporation is adding value to the world, not just taking. We feel like too many are taking, taking, taking. And so I just want to remind you to think about it from that perspective as well. And if you're a corporate brand that you wish you could help more, come in here and fund the things that are helping our community with our identities and our nuances. Because I'm telling you, as an expert in the space, that the disability debrief is something that we find very powerful, which is why I always share it with my audience. And I have a very large audience. And so when we find people that are really doing the things that are really adding value to us, we need to celebrate them. And so I definitely will join y'all in celebrating Peter and all the work that's being done. So once again, it is www.disabilitydebrief.org. And you can find Peter Torres Fremlin on LinkedIn and other places. You can do a search on him. He has a lot of background, and he's a brilliant consultant. I don't know if he's doing consulting anymore. You'll have to talk to him about that. But Peter, thank you. Thank you for being you. Thank you for your work. Thank you for always trying to figure out the nuances of how do we make our experiences a little bit richer and a little bit more inclusive? So I'm very grateful for that. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Deborah. I'm really touched by your support doing independent media on the internet. Bit of a lonely road. So I really appreciate the celebration. I'd really love for more people to join me in that.
I agree. All right. So once again, please go out and sign up for disabilitydebrief.org. Fund it if it's any small amount will help. But if you're a corporation, you really want to make a difference, here's an opportunity that we need. So, and once again, we're putting it on Billion Strong because we want the community to find this. So thank you to everybody that watches this show and supports what we're trying to do. And Peter, thank you for the blessing of your leadership. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Bye, everyone.
You've been listening to Human Potential at Work. To learn more about Ru Global Impact, visit RuGlobal.com. And to learn more about Billion Strong, an identity and empowerment organization designed to bring the billions of voices of persons with disabilities together, you can join the global community and donate at billion-strong.org. That's billion-strong.org.